It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert's off today. Coming up, a new Gallup poll shows the number of uninsured Americans is on track to be the lowest it's been in years. A health policy expert discusses whether or not this is because of the Affordable Care Act. First, there have been five major extinction events since the birth of life on our planet, wiping out not just a species here and there, but hundreds or even thousands of them. The most recent and most famous was the fifth extinction, 65 million years ago, the event that wiped out the dinosaurs, among others, most likely caused by a collision with an asteroid. Or maybe that's not the most recent extinction event. A growing number of scientists say there's a lot of evidence that we're in the middle of one right now, and it's our fault. Elizabeth Colbert joins us now. She's a staff writer at The New Yorker. Her new book is The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we may have the sense that we're losing a species every now and again, and there are others endangered on the brink. What's the evidence that we're in the midst of an actual mass extinction event?
Well, I think people have this idea, you know, as you say, we are losing this species, we're losing that species, and it doesn't really strike them as anything unusual because we've really become inured to that sort of information. But what happens when you look at the long picture, at the big picture, is we discover that actually, you know, in the course of a human lifetime, you really should not see a single species go extinct. So geologists define something known as the background extinction rate. That's the rate at which you'd expect species to be going extinct sort of in the normal, quote-unquote, normal course of events. And when they compare the rate at which species are going extinct now to that, they see that it is, you know, hundreds, probably thousands of times higher than it has been for most of the history of life.
And the idea in this sixth extinction is this one's on us. This is all, or mostly at least, caused by humans in one way or the other.
Yes, I'm gonna go with all there. I mean, there are it's very, very, very difficult to point to a species that has or is going extinct, you know, in recent history and say that it had no component, of human activity that led to its demise. And the reason for this is simply that we have become really the dominant force on the planet right now. We are changing the world very quickly and very radically. We have replaced the geological forces that in the past caused these events.
We'll get into some of what you learned talking to scientists all over the world about this, but I want to get into the why a little. You write that you're worried about the legacy our species will leave behind when we're gone.
Well, if you really take, once again, the long view, we tend to look at human accomplishments in terms of our arts and our music and our monuments, let's say, cultural achievements. But if you look at what is really going to survive on Earth, it's going to be the record of what we did to other species. That's going to be inscribed, as it were, in the rocks. And whoever or whatever comes along millions of years from now is going to see that some very dramatic event in the history of life happened right now. And that is going to be our legacy. It's going to determine the course of life forever, right? Because if you cut off one evolutionary pathway, that pathway is never followed again. So we are determining, you know, both which pathways are being cut off and at the same time which pathways are going to remain open and repopulate this planet.
The concept of extinction, as humans understand it, is relatively new. When did we first start thinking of the concept that a species could go extinct?
Yeah, that's a really interesting story that I try to recount in the book. And if you go back about, as recently as the late 1700s, people really had no concept of extinction. And this was the case even though, as Europeans came to North America, they encountered a lot of really weird bones that they couldn't explain. For example, mastodon bones were very, very perplexing to the Europeans. And even Thomas Jefferson, who was really a fossil aficionado and kept them at the White House, he thought that when he sent Lewis and Clark to the Northwest, they were going to find live mastodons roaming around, because the general idea was if an animal had been created, you know, it had been created for all time, and it was still out there somewhere. And then a French naturalist named Georges Cuvier came along and really just said, no, that's not the case. If these animals were out there, we would have seen them already. And that was really the first instance of someone someone definitively declaring something extinct, and he went on to sort of posit many, many extinctions and to, in fact, find or at least identify many extinct animals. He named the mastodon, for example. We get that word from him. He named pterodactyls. We get that word from him. So his legacy also lives on in our language.
As we bought the concept of extinction, we started discovering these mass extinction events that you write about. What were some of the causes of those five previous massive die-offs?
Well, that's another very interesting question, and many of them are still, you know, very much under investigation, as it were, because you're looking at cold cases, as it were, that are now hundreds, in some cases, hundreds of millions of years old. So the very first of these, what are called the Big Five mass extinctions of the last half a billion years, occurred about 450 million years ago. And at that point, life was still really confined to the water. So that was a devastating event for marine life, but not for terrestrial life, because there simply was no terrestrial life. And that, it's believed, was caused by a sudden cold snap, planetary cold snap, a glaciation. But no one knows exactly why that glaciation took place. And the most recent one, which you alluded to, the event that did in, you know, not just the dinosaurs, but lots and lots of the world, lots and lots of the major groups of organisms on the world, the pterosaurs and the ammonites and most of the mammals and most of the reptiles. I mean, it was a very devastating event. It's believed to have been caused by an asteroid impact. There's a pretty broad scientific consensus that was the cause.
A newer idea in science, though, is this idea of the sixth extinction that we're in the midst of. When did that idea come about, and how quickly is that concept spreading?
Well, I think the sixth extinction idea, and I personally have been unable to uncover exactly who the first person was to use that phrase, came about pretty much as soon as people realized, and this was not until there's sort of a twisting history to the study of extinction, and it for quite a long time it was believed that these extinction events must have, to the extent that they were events, they happened very slowly, they weren't really events. It was believed that you didn't get sudden change on Earth, and that was a product of a British naturalist named Charles Lyell, who was a mentor to Darwin and really influenced geology for many, many generations, his theories. And then it was not till the 1980s when it was proposed that an asteroid impact was what had done in the dinosaurs and ended the Cretaceous period that people began to rethink this idea of, can the Earth change very quickly? Are there catastrophes in the history of life? And right around that time was when people were starting to look at what are extinction rates today and becoming very alarmed about that. So the notion that catastrophes can happen and that a catastrophe is in fact happening, you know, sort of occurred to people right around the same time, probably in the mid-1980s.
And it's unprecedented. One species apparently driving this new mass extinction. What is it about the way we evolved that made us different from every other species that had come before and made us a risk factor for a mass extinction?
Well, we turn out to be a really unusual phenomenon, and one of the only real unifying characteristics that all of these extinction events seem to share is that they represent moments of rapid global change. And when you think about it, what are people doing right now? We are rapidly changing the whole globe. And the way we're doing that, you know, turns out to be that we're very smart. We have these huge societies. We're very cooperative. And we pass knowledge down from one generation to the other, so we learn a lot, and what we learn, we maintain. And these are all, you know, really, when you think about it, pretty much unique in the animal world. So we have the power to change the world. We've had that for a long, long time, and we have, in fact, probably been causing extinctions for quite a while. You know, when the first Native Americans arrived on this continent, they found a lot of huge animals, mastodons, mammoths, huge ground sloths that are not around. And it's widely believed at this point that hunting probably did in those large animals that had a very low birth rate. So we've been at this for a while, but when you think of how much technology has improved, how much globalization has ratcheted up in the last few generations, you start to see why our impacts are becoming more and more pervasive and more potentially dangerous.
Elizabeth Kolbert is with us. We're talking about her new book, The Sixth Extinction, about the possibility that we're in the midst of a mass extinction event and that our species is driving that event. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, your solutions. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. We continue our conversation about the sixth extinction, a mass extinction event caused by our species, our guest says. Elizabeth Kolbert is with us. Her new book is The Sixth Extinction. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. We'll get to your calls in just a few moments. First, though, Elizabeth, why will this affect us? All these species are going extinct. Is it going to hurt us? Are we going to be a part of the extinction event we created ourselves?
Well, I rather pointedly avoid answering that question. How's that in the book? Although obviously it's a question that everyone is interested in, and I guess there are two ways to answer it. I mean, first of all, we have driven a lot of species extinct already. We're very good at taking over the niches and habitats of other species, and so far, you know, we've done pretty well doing that. So there are more people on the planet than ever right now. So it's possible that we'll be fine, but it's also possible, you know, one of the paleontologists I quote in the book says that at these moments of mass extinction, the rules of the survival game seem to change, and groups of organisms, you know, like the dinosaurs, who were dominant for quite a long time, far longer than humans have even existed, are suddenly gone. And so when you change the rules of the survival game, you sort of don't know what's going to happen. You could say at that point all bets are off.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Laura in New Berlin. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Rob. Given the indefensible, ignominious harm our species causes, do you think it would be ethical and honorable for us to completely change direction and regard ongoing expansion as unacceptable? In fact, a reduction of, let's say, 90% or more of our numbers is the only ethical course so that we can cohabit in the biosphere.
Elizabeth, what do you think?
Well, a reduction of our numbers of 90% or more is a very, very tall order. I mean, in fact, human population is still increasing pretty at a pretty rapid clip. We're going to, you know, hit 8 billion people probably within the next decade or so, and then population is projected to continue to increase, although at a slower rate over the rest of the century. I'm not sure, you know, that there's any ethical way, unfortunately, to radically reduce our numbers either. So what the ethical, you know, path when we have a lot of people on the planet, and at the same time when we know that we're having, you know, potentially quite devastating impacts on so many other species, you know, what the ethics are of that situation, I'm going to say I just don't know.
Well, but do you think there's an ethical responsibility to try to prevent future extinctions wherever possible?
I certainly think there's an ethical responsibility to try, whether that means, you know, that we have a responsibility. I'm not sure what your caller meant, to be honest, by radically reducing the human population.
Well, setting aside the human population, just conservation efforts, that sort of thing.
Yes, but I think the point of the book really is that we have to look at these ways in which we're changing the planet, you know, that go beyond any kind of spatial or boundary. You know, we're putting a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. We're changing the climate. We're changing the chemistry of the oceans. We're moving species around the world at a very, very rapid clip. Something like 10,000 species are being moved around the world every day in the ballast water of our ships. So, and that can have quite devastating impact. So we have to look even beyond, you know, sort of what we think of as conserving this piece of habitat or that, if we want to look at the really root causes of what's going on.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Carl with us in Madison. Hi, Carl.
Yes, hello. There's a saying that nature bats last, and the way in which we dump so much CO2 into the atmosphere may be having an effect on how much methane is being released in the Arctic, because as the Arctic warms and the ice sheets that are covering up all that ancient flora and fauna are dumped into the atmosphere as well. We don't know how close we are to a tipping point in which runaway climate change becomes something that we really have no say or any more control over. And it strikes me that we're such an odd species to have the knowledge and the understanding that this is what we're doing to our planet. And yet, you know, quotes that Wisconsin may have the climate of Arkansas within my children's lifetime, that's not a far-fetched idea. That's mainstream science extrapolated out from where we are now to where we're going if we don't fundamentally change. And yet we don't seem to be able to grab that in a way that politicians or the ways in which we make decisions or really reason over future choices, we seem to be blind or paralyzed by our own destructive capacity.
Thanks for the call, Carl. Elizabeth, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think Carl makes a really, really, several really, really good points. And E.O. Wilson, you know, who's really one of the most famous biologists out there today, has this phrase, and I'm not going to get it quite right, but he points out that we have minds that are really, you know, prehistoric. We're really basically the same as our Stone Age ancestors, but now we possess these godlike technologies, and that's not necessarily a happy combination, but it just is the way it is. And so our ability to invent various technologies, which we then cannot control the effects of, you know, maybe that's surprising, but on some ways maybe it's not surprising. There's no given that just because we can invent it, we can use it properly.
Carl, thanks a lot for the call. Another concept that's risen, I think, around the same time as the sixth extinction is the idea that we're in a new geological era, the Anthropocene era. Can you talk about what that is, what that means?
Yes, I mean, that's very intimately related to this idea that we are changing the planet on a geological scale. So geologists, you know, divide time into these various epochs and periods and eras, the big system, and they look at these times where there seem to have been changes for whatever reason. Sometimes it's hard to identify why, either changes in the fauna, so changes in the fossil record, or changes in the topography, you know, sort of the Earth. And when they think about sort of projecting into the future, okay, what is this moment in time going to look like in the geological record? They say, well, this is going to look at, you know, as dramatic as many of the major episodes in Earth history, so potentially as dramatic as that asteroid impact that ended the Cretaceous and that, you know, wiped out so many species. It will seem slow to us because we're in the middle of it, but when it's compressed down to a tiny layer of sediment, it's going to look very, very fast, very much, you know, like an impact.
I wanted to bring up that idea of timescale that you just touched on. An event happening over the course of 20,000 years is a very short period of time for a geologist, say, a very long time, obviously, for a human. How can we recalibrate our thinking to grasp a concept that we're in the midst of this thousands of year long mass extinction?
Yeah, that's really one of the things I try to do in the book, is give people a really, you know, long perspective on life and lift us a little bit out of our day-to-day, where people may say, well, look, I don't see any change going on, right? Because we do all live in one small place and have one small experience. And so to try to help people and spur people to think about things in a longer range, in a bigger picture sort of way. And when you do that, as you suggest, you have to really completely try, and it's very, very, you know, tough, and obviously we can only partially succeed at this, to think of time in a different way, you know, how long life has been here and how long hopefully it will be here, and to see our moment here as really just a small part of this story. And in fact, humans, you know, modern humans have only been around for about 200,000 years, and life has been around for about 3.5 billion years. So you see how very, very recent we are on the face of the Earth.
Elizabeth, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That was Elizabeth Colbert, staff writer for The New Yorker. Her new book is The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History.